This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about empathy with trainer, author, and fellow podcaster Emma Sue Prince. She wrote the book Seven Skills for the Future, all about skills we can each develop in ourselves to better support our own mental health and that of others. It was really brilliant to meet her, and I'm really looking forward to sharing that interview shortly. But before we get into anything more about Emma Sue, we've got some definitions and stats to start us off on this theme. So first off, a definition from the Cambridge English Dictionary. They defined empathy as the ability to share someone else's feelings or experiences by imagining what it would be like to be in that person's situation. So first off, Danny, how do you feel about that definition?
Yeah, I think that's a great definition. It's really simple and easy to understand. I think it's part of the problem, isn't it? Understanding what other people are going through, and there's a difference between empathy and sympathy. And I think Emma Sue talks about that quite clearly in terms of what empathy actually is. But yeah, that's really important for us all, isn't it, in life, just to imagine what it'd be like to be in another person's situation. I think if you can really try and develop that skill, it really does set you up for the future to be able to support your friends and family and colleagues and yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And the great thing about empathy is it's not a requirement for you to have that experience. And so I think it's the key to bridging the gap on what you don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of the time, particularly for things like mental illness, if you haven't experienced it, it can be difficult to fully understand. But empathy is the way you can somewhat bridge that.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so then in terms of empathy, we've got some stats. First from Business Solver Workplace Empathy Monitor. That was a study carried out in 2017. They found 85% of employees agree that empathy is often undervalued by their employer. 30% don't feel the company they work for is empathetic. How do you feel about those?
It's interesting. I mean, you know, 85% of employees agree that empathy is often undervalued. It's massive, but it's not surprising. Again, it's that skill that leadership teams don't always necessarily feel is important to develop. And I think that's what Emma Sue has been, you know, on her journey to try and really improve that, whether that's in organisations such as universities or in workplaces, because the character of leadership teams, their personal characters absolutely are really, really critical to being good leaders. It's not just the other skills, you know, the harder skills that we talk about.
Right. And even that distinction annoys me a bit, this kind of idea of hard skills and soft skills, because it's what people describe as soft skills are often the ones that allow us to best relate to other humans and understand each other and get on and work together in the first place. Like, what's more important than that?
Yeah, soft skills undermines how important these skills are. These are like the key skills that you need, the personal skills, the connections, the communication, empathy, all of the things that, you're absolutely right, help us to be a team, to work together, to work with people.
And as we talk about a little bit in the episode, they may be referred to as soft skills, but they can be some of the hardest to learn.
Yeah.
You know, it can take a lot of personal soul searching to develop empathy, to develop optimism, resilience, integrity, the kind of skills she talked about in her work. So I'm really glad we're covering it. And we've got some more interesting stats in terms of workplace as well. First off, again, from the Business Solver Workplace Empathy Monitor study, they found 60% of employees would be willing to take slightly less pay if their employer showed empathy. And 77% of employees would be willing to work longer hours for an empathetic employer. And these stats both really confirm something I already believe, that it doesn't take huge investment to be a better workplace for everyone's mental health. You know, it doesn't always mean you've got to add these, you know, extra benefits or more holiday time. This is a clear example of how actually showing a bit more of a human approach and trying to develop empathy within the management team can be so beneficial, and actually the employees will step up and do more, potentially, as this says, for less, just for that kind of understanding and better treatment.
100%. In my years of working in cultural change and leadership development, it was such a learning curve. It was really surprising, actually, that we'd go into meetings and try and, you know, help train managers and leaders around these kind of skills that just weren't in their, you know, in their thoughts. But a few years ago, it was in the organisation that I worked in, it was, which was a construction organisation and quite, you know, heavily male dominated, there just wasn't that opportunity for people to actually connect. So people would then, like you said, there'd be more days off. People wouldn't come in and do the extra hours because they just felt that the employees didn't care. There were laws in place, but in the, so people would be like, well, I'm going off and I don't care what they say because I've got legal rights, as opposed to wanting to go the extra mile for your boss.
Yeah, well, in its simplest form, it's about, if you feel your boss is invested in you, you're more likely to be invested in them and the work culture and the workplace.
Yeah. And you produce higher productivity.
Yeah, because, you know, ultimately, when you're in a business, people may buy from a business because of their love of the brand, but when you're in one, it's about the environment.
Absolutely.
You know, there's only so long you can be like, oh, I can't believe I got a job at such and such a company. Because if they're horrible to work with, that'll soon wear off.
Yeah.
And an example I wanted to bring up of how being part of a really wonderful organisation, the NHS, the Mental Health Foundation found that over a third of nurses reported being subject to bullying, harassment or abuse from patients or their relatives in 2016. And that was something I wanted to particularly bring in as an example of how that kind of treatment can be a key cause of burnout as well. So if anyone wants to hear more about burnout, we had an episode of that with Suki Bassi, which you can find by scrolling back in our feed. And that has recently taken the crown as our most listened to episode ever. So we're really looking forward to sharing Emma Sue's interview with you. She was such a delight to me. She's really cares about her work. The passion she has for it comes across so much in speaking to her. And so, yeah. Enjoy this episode all about empathy. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
My name is Emma Sue Prince, and I would say that my connection with mental health probably started from the beginning of my life. My mother suffered from mental health problems. She had bipolar and extreme manic depression, so that was part of my life growing up. And my older sister suffers still from depression and also from a form of schizophrenia. So I would say that these have been present with me for all of my life.
At the time when you were very young, how much understanding did you have of the reasons why your mum was, let's say, acting a bit differently to some of your friends' mums?
I think when you're a child, you accept what's happening around you, so it becomes your norm. So I think as a young child, I probably wasn't very aware. I was quite happy. When my mother was not depressed, she was great to be around, and we used to have a lot of crazy adventures, and probably was connected with the sort of manic part of the depression. But I think you just accept that these things are normal. So I wasn't really aware, even though there were points where I was in care or, you know, couldn't live at home sometimes. But I think you just accept that's the way it is.
And I think that is very common. Your first experience growing up in the household is how you first interpret the world. So that's your kind of default. And then as you grow up, you start to compare yourself to your peers and your peers' family. And that was definitely an experience I had. So were you aware of how much her mood changed? Did that seem abnormal to you at all as a child?
Sometimes, because I would be aware that actually it probably wasn't a really good time to approach her because she was really, really down. But even so, I still wouldn't have classed it as being not normal. I still think as a child, I just accepted.
You just kind of took it for granted?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it was when I was perhaps a teenager that I started to question a bit more what was happening.
Mm-hmm. And so do you remember at what kind of age mental illness was explained to you, or, you know, why she needed to take certain medication and how that all fitted together?
I don't think that was ever explained, actually. I don't think anyone, even when there were times when I wasn't living at home, I don't think anyone actually sat down and spoke to me about why that was. It could have been also because I was the youngest. I think my older sisters probably knew more, but I didn't. And then when I was a teenager, I was aware of the amount of medication she was taking because I could see how it affected her as well.
Right. So what kind of effects did it have?
So, for example, at that particular point, we were living in America, and I think sometimes my mother was quite influenced by the environment around her. So there were points before that where things had been happier, and then we were living in America, it was more difficult, and I was aware that she was under a lot of medication, so she would fall asleep at strange times and couldn't have a conversation because she would be asleep. So I knew that wasn't normal.
Right.
And then, of course, at that age, you're kind of working out your own identity. And so I was at a point where I was thinking, gosh, you know, this is all a bit crazy. I don't really want to be around this.
Interesting. And it's sad to hear what sounds like you being shielded from her mental illness a lot, that often in families we think that ignorance is better than knowing. Of course, that's not true, and it, I think, can have really harmful effects with how you understand your family dynamic when a condition that was such a big part of your mum's day-to-day life was being hidden from you then. How can you truly know her if there's this whole part of what she's dealing with day-to-day that you don't have information on? Yet you had siblings that did know about it. So do you know how they were able to kind of understand and navigate that?
I think there were friends of the family who they were talking to, so I think they did know more. I also think when you're a child, part of the accepting of things is because you also feel that you're involved with it. So if that makes sense. So I think there were times when she was not in a good way where I would automatically think it was something to do with me. And of course, it would have helped if I'd known that it wasn't to do with me directly. That's quite common, I think, for children.
Yeah, you didn't have enough information to know what was really causing these mood changes. So it makes a lot of sense you were trying to rationalise that.
And
look at, oh, could it be something in my behaviour that's causing these drastic changes that other people I'm interacting with aren't having. So that makes a lot of sense. And so with this episode being about empathy, to what degree were you able to understand what your mother was going through, and when did that start to develop?
I think that probably only started to develop as I became older. I think empathy, you know, it's quite a difficult emotion, difficult skill. I'm sure I spent a lot of my time, a lot of those earlier years not being empathetic, I have to say. I think I probably felt that I should have had a different kind of childhood, or, you know, should have been different in some way. So I would say empathy has come much later.
With what you described there, did you find yourself feeling resentful at all when you looked back at your childhood as you grew up?
Possibly, yeah. I think for a long time I didn't have a good understanding of what mental illness was. And so that would manifest itself in not being very tolerant of others and not necessarily being able to understand why somebody would be acting a certain way or behaving a certain way, and being able to empathize in the sense that, okay, that's actually to do with mental health. I'd be coming far more from a kind of blaming perspective. And that's a difficult thing to acknowledge in yourself, you know, but I know that to be the case. It took me a very long time to understand what empathy really is, and to have empathy for what my mother was experiencing. So I think it's kind of like you have this period of childhood where you accept, then you've got your teenage years and early adult where actually you're figuring yourself out, so you're very self-obsessed anyway, so, you know, everything around you is awful.
Everything
and, you know,
is all from your perspective.
Yeah, so there's no empathy. And then I think, you know, through your own life experiences that changes again.
I think that's a really great way of putting it. But it's also good to hear that you're able to acknowledge the times when you weren't empathetic. Because there can be a lot of guilt around that. But realistically, empathy is not a default mode. It's something you have to learn and practice like you would any skill. And, you know, that's, I think, the important distinction between that and sympathy.
Yes.
That it's a far more natural response. Let's say someone's going through a difficult time, to feel sorry for them,
yeah,
but not necessarily relate to the feelings they're having, you're just focused on the feelings you're having about their situation.
Yeah, that's
right. It's that external way of looking in rather than sitting in the feelings with somebody.
Exactly, yes. And also a big part of empathy is staying away from judgment, which we do automatically, and to actually have true empathy, there's no judgment.
Right. But it also sounds like you were at a bit of a disadvantage because your mum's support was mainly through medication.
Mm.
And so that, whilst it can be incredibly transformative to people's mental health, it doesn't lend itself as much to other people understanding. It sort of can be seen as a way to band-aid a problem rather than go into maybe what could be the core causes.
Mm.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I think it was very much, I think in those days there was a lot more medication for depression and for the kinds of things that she was suffering from. And I don't know whether other things would have helped. Possibly other kinds of therapies may have helped, but they certainly weren't that common then.
Right.
I think it was all about, you know, something's not right, you take some medication. And they were quite strong. I mean, she was taking lithium and Valium, you know, the strong medication.
Yeah. And that's really difficult because not only is that going to really affect her mood and her kind of cognitive abilities and her being sleepy at certain points that you've described, but also it's not supporting her in communicating what she's going through in a way that something like counselling and other types of support would do. So it makes a lot of sense that it took you building up a certain understanding independently to then see what her experience was. And as you've got older, how has this increased empathy and understanding changed other relationships in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I think empathy needs to start with yourself. And I think that was very much the case for me. So I experienced a lot of difficult situations when I was a young adult, partly because I think I just couldn't find my way very well. And I think I played out a lot of things that had happened in childhood as I was growing up, which I think is also very common. So that meant I was in often quite not healthy relationships and not great life choices and things like that. So,
do you mind sharing an example?
So, for example, just really short-term relationships, not being able to sustain a relationship beyond a few months and being attracted to people who were not good for me at all, you know, just not the right kind of person. But I think that is also when you don't feel whole yourself, you start to look for the things that are missing in other people, but they can't actually provide that because it's got to come from you. So I just was looking for that in relationships. That's how it played out. A lot of quite risky behaviour, not being able to work out what I was going to do with my life, but just a lot of feeling very lost. And so I had those experiences. Then I had a period of really, you know, berating myself about those experiences. So that's why I say empathy has to start with yourself, because you have to look at, I had to learn to love myself and learn to have compassion for my experiences and for what I've been through in my life.
Right, because it sounds like you'd fallen into a bit of a trap there where you were trying to put your happiness and your growth into other people's hands. You know, if you find the right partner, they'll help you become the best
completely.
Version of you.
Yeah.
But then also when things were going badly, you weren't blaming them, you were also blaming yourself.
It was very silly kind of cycle of things, but very much thinking, oh, you know, if I just am with the right person, it'll all be okay, and wanting to have love around me, and so just these kind of classic things, I think. And
that's perfectly natural to want those things,
but it
sounds like as you developed a greater understanding of yourself and empathy towards yourself, you learn how to look after you first.
How
actually by looking after yourself, you're more suitable for a relationship and you can create a more healthy environment where you're not expecting somebody else to make you happy.
Yes, completely. And I honestly believe that it's very difficult to have empathy for anybody else if you don't have it for yourself first. And that's not about being sorry for yourself or self-indulgent. It's just really having a healthy self-awareness, healthy understanding of yourself and your experiences, and an acceptance. And then, you know, once you're there, then I think you have something that you can give. to others.
Right. Particularly when it comes to experiencing mental illness or symptoms, there can be that issue of, as if the symptoms aren't bad enough, we often judge ourselves for them. We'll get anxious in a situation, and then we'll be judging ourselves for the anxiety, and that only makes things worse. And so empathy isn't about thinking you're the best person in the world. It's just about having a bit of understanding and really being in tune, because for you to be empathetic with somebody else, you're trying to tune into their emotions and where they're coming from. And equally, it can sound automatic, but it's often not. We can often be quite out of tune with our emotions. We're ignoring things, or we're judging the way we feel rather than just feeling it.
Yes.
And just experiencing it. And sometimes we have to do that, sit in the feelings to work them out. And so it sounds like quite a transformational process you went through. Was there anything in particular that sort of triggered that journey of becoming more empathetic?
I think I'm not sure whether it was something specific. I think I had got to a point where things had got bad enough that I wanted to have some help. So I did have a very good therapist who was actually quite hard-hitting in many ways, but I think I needed to have that. And he was a male therapist, which was probably also a good thing for me. And I think that helped me a lot. And I think the biggest turning point there was recognizing that I could make choices. I could make choices about my life, and I could choose my behaviors and my actions and my thoughts, even, rather than feeling that there's all these things happening around me. And so taking responsibility and then looking at how I would take that forward. So I think that probably was a turning point, I would say, in my 30s. So it took me quite a long time. And then I think it's also about, when I think about mental health, in particular mental illness, I think for me, because of having that in my family, I needed to get to a point where I could really empathize with it. Because otherwise, you're not coming from a place of acceptance. You're coming from a place where you don't accept it. And I think probably that was part of my problem for a while, for a long time. I couldn't accept the way my life, if that makes sense. I couldn't accept this is my life. Whereas when you are a whole person, you accept everything that's in your life. So I would say that I've gone from a journey of non-acceptance to empathy to gratitude and being grateful for my life and my experiences, because I wouldn't be who I am now. I wouldn't be doing the work I do now. I wouldn't be the person I am now without everything, every single thing, even the, you know, not so great things. I'm grateful for all of them. That's a really strong place to be. That's a really grounded, strong place to be.
Right, that's so lovely to hear, that journey you've been through and how it's really shifted the way you look on your family, that it's not that original thinking of, oh, things are bad because of this, and if only they were different. Because that wishful thinking only gets you so far. You know, sometimes it can be nice to think about, oh, imagine if my mum had been different in this way, or my family had been different in this way. But you've got to actually start from where you are, not where you want to be. And it sounds like you've shifted completely to now be at a place of focusing more on the positives of your experiences and the skills and the empathy it's taught you, and instead not judging any of these experiences or good or bad, but instead they were learning experiences. And you've learned to better empathize with your family as a result. And so how has that changed how you interact with them?
Well, my mother's dead now, so I don't, you know, she died when I was quite young, actually. So again, that probably was another area that was quite difficult for me, because I've probably a lot of unfinished, you know, unfinished things there. But my sister suffers from mental illness, and she does take medication. And I think for a long time, I would say even up to fairly recently, I think, not recently, but, you know, maybe sort of 5-10 years ago, I still wanted her to have a different life. So I still thought, well, you know, maybe if she could perhaps do artwork. She used to love doing artwork. Maybe if she could do that, she would be happier. Or maybe if she, you know, if we did more things and went out more. And so I would orchestrate various events and things, because it was a way that I could feel better.
Yeah.
That's what I realise now, that actually it was not about me.
It was about you.
It was about me. It was still about me. You know, and just the even things like, and I still do it actually, but, you know, family events like Christmas and birthday, I am the person who organises all these things for the family. I've sort of taken on that role and I recognise it, and it's fine. I'm like the mum. Yeah. Because my sisters are older, so I am obviously the mum. But I also recognise why I'm doing it, and I quite like it. So I quite enjoy it. But I did have to go through a point where I could see that actually I was doing it in regards to my sister, because I wanted her to sort of get better as a result of doing these lovely things. And that's not the case with mental illness. And there'd be times when she wouldn't show up, you know, so I would get really upset, you know, why isn't she coming to our great party, and not really empathizing with the fact that actually for her that was a really difficult thing to do. So I think that's quite interesting. So that when I think about that and think, okay, actually that was me wanting to kind of make things better.
Right, you were putting your expectations on her, and in many ways the ways that you were happily living your life, you assumed that that would be the same for her, that the things that brought you joy would also bring her joy.
Yeah, because I'd be thinking, oh, you know, she's not doing anything.
Yeah, whereas actually these kind of big social occasions and these certain like seasonal events can be incredibly stressful for people. And I'm sure they were stressful for you organising that.
Yeah. So you know, I now interact with her in ways that are comfortable for her. So she likes to text. I think she spends ages writing her texts, and she really, really does like to write texts. Mm-hmm. So I send her texts back because that's what she likes. She likes to communicate in that way. And just little things like that, so I think that's what true empathy is actually not communicating in the way that I would like to, but actually coming to where she's at and then adapting my behaviour so that we can actually have some interaction, because otherwise we won't have any.
Yeah, there's a motivational speaker I really love called Lisa Nichols, who I'm always mentioning on the podcast, and she talks about the common experience of you'll be in a shopping centre and before you go anywhere you have to start with the you are here bit on the map, and it's reminded me of that you had to first learn to start from your own true starting point, not where you wish you'd be, not the family that maybe would have been easier, but the family that you got and the family that you love and really care about and look after. And then once you've learned to do that yourself, you've become better at starting with where your sister's starting from and adapting more to how she navigates the world as opposed to your perspective. As what sounds like the family matriarch. You're really looking after everyone.
I quite like it, actually.
But it's also a position where you have more control. You know, if you're organising everything, you have the control as well as the looking after. And for certain types of people, that can feel a lot more comfortable. You know, I know for myself, as stressful as it can be, always being the one that makes plans, whether it's with my friends or my family, I'm comfortable with that. And it's about how I can be comfortable but also consider everyone else's needs as well. So having gone through these formative experiences, how has it shaped how you're more empathetic towards your own children and raise them differently?
Yes, I think I'm more relaxed as a parent, because I think if you're coming from a place where you're calm and you're grounded, then I think that's going to definitely have a positive impact on how you parent. However, I still think empathy is different again when you parent. So I'll give you an example. So my youngest son, just last September, he was settling into a new school and really having a hard time. And this is a great school, and he'd won this music scholarship, and, you know, lots of loaded expectations, I guess, coming at him. But he's had a really, really hard time settling in, coming home in tears every single day. And I found myself saying things to him like, oh, you know, don't worry, it's half term soon, and, you know, it's a great school, and you'll make friends, you know, just saying these things, which was not empathising. It was trying to kind of, again, trying to sort of stop the feeling that he was having. So, and empathy really is about feeling with the other person. And I caught myself doing it, because I am hopefully more self-aware now. So I caught myself doing it. I thought, actually, I just need to be with him in that feeling. But it's also because when you see somebody close to you who's upset, you actually just want to make it better. That's your natural instinct, especially as a parent. You just want to, you know, my baby's suffering, I need to make them better. So I recognised that and then changed what I was saying and said, that sounds really tough.
Yeah.
You know, you've had a really difficult day. Or just acknowledging the feeling. And actually that would create a completely different result, because he would then talk about it and felt okay about being upset about it. And then we just move on.
Right.
You know, rather than have this sort of long, huge conversation about it.
Yeah, because otherwise you're coming from very different places and he's trying to almost convince you potentially
yes.
what he's going through yeah. and communicate yeah. emotions that you're not yeah. picking up. Whereas instead, by leading with empathy, you're also starting by listening
yeah.
and trying to understand. And so you are a lot more on the same page. And so often in all kinds of relationships in our life, if we start from that point, if we listen first,
yeah.
that's often all people need.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I have it all the time yeah. where people are like, oh, I just want your opinion on something.
Mm.
And then they tell me all about it. And then they feel lighter for sharing it. And then we move on.
Yes.
And they never actually ask for my opinion.
Yeah.
They just
yeah.
wanted to share. And that was helpful and a bit of a load off.
Yeah.
Because school is incredibly overwhelming yeah. at times.
Yeah.
I remember how exhausted I would be for years of my life just coming back from school and just all those social interactions and all the learning. And I just kind of have to choose, all right, which couch am I sitting on? Because once I sit on it, I'm not sure how easy it'll be to get back up. And so sometimes it's just a case of someone listening and understanding yeah. that, rather than if my mum had come in and said, what are you doing laying around on the couch? Don't you have homework to do? We're suddenly on completely different sides of my experience.
Mm. We were talking earlier about acceptance, but I think a key part of empathy, especially when it comes to listening, is the ability to be in the present.
Right.
So it's all these different things, and I think being present is a key part of being able to accept and being able to listen. So if we are constantly, I don't know, not allowing ourselves to be present, if we're not able to focus and be present, that has a huge impact on our ability to be empathetic.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the person you're speaking to, they can feel really misunderstood because you're not seeing a big part of their experience, which is how they're feeling. And so you've developed this wonderful skill, but you've also developed all kinds of other skills when it comes to your own mental health and supporting others. So do you mind sharing how you got into the work that you do now?
Yeah, well, I have worked in education and training for a long time, which is actually quite funny because I did actually drop out of school at 16, but I managed to get all that back again. So I've been working in education and training, and I was asked to write a book about soft skills, and which was a fantastic thing to be asked to write a book. And I just sat down one day and I thought about what are the skills that have helped me in my life the most. Because I couldn't think of anything else that I could write about for this pitch that I had to write for the book. So I thought, what are the things that help me? And I came up with these 7 skills, which are adaptability, critical thinking, empathy, but also integrity, being proactive, being optimistic, and being resilient. And I, as a result of writing that book, I developed workshops to help raise people's awareness of these skills. Because I think we can all look back on our lives and we can identify when we were empathetic or when we were resilient, because these are skills that are inside us. So we are naturally hardwired, for example, to be empathetic. It's just you've got to get in touch with that in yourself.
Yeah, it's up to a point and it still takes practice.
Oh, yes, exactly, exactly. So I then thought, how could I develop something that would help people to have a stronger awareness in the moment of these skills, not looking back, but actually when it's, you know, when you actually need to have empathy in the moment or you need to be resilient or whatever it is. So I developed these experiential learning workshops to help people have stronger awareness of these skills. And that's pretty much all the work I do at the moment is connected with these seven skills. They're very close to my heart. And I feel I have found my life's purpose with the work that I do now, which is a huge privilege. And
right. Yeah. So many people don't have that.
No. No, so I feel very connected with that work and feel very grateful for my life experiences because, as I said earlier on, I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing without all of those experiences.
Mm-hmm. And like you said before, there's such strength and such power from coming at the world from that perspective.
Yes.
And they're such important skills. We actually did an episode before on resilience, so if the listeners want to learn a bit more about another of these skills, there was an incredibly moving episode we did with Sophie Sarbidge on that, who went through cancer and is still experiencing terminal cancer, but has learned just how resilient she can be by going through some of her darkest experiences. Mm. So it's really wonderful you've identified these and brought them into your work because they are always referred to as soft skills. And I kind of have an inner quarrel with that term because soft implies that they're not as important.
Yeah.
But actually, they're so integral to what we do. Mm. And I see time and time again people that have had really high-flying careers, but then they've maybe stretched themselves too far. And then mental illness comes across. And if they don't have these, quote, soft skills, that's when they fall down. Not based on their ability to do the job or their academia or their qualifications, but how they're coping as a person.
Yes, yes. No, these are skills that help you in every aspect of your life, for sure. And I think empathy in particular has got the power to transform all your relationships, whether they're personal or professional. If you can tap into empathy and use it when it's important to use it, you'll always know what to say.
Exactly. And
I
think you'll often find yourself saying things that are more authentic, like what you mentioned with your son. You said to him that was tough. People often like when they tell me about traumatic things because I'll often just be like, that sounds really shit.
Yeah.
And that's honest, you know, and that connects with how they feel and they feel understood, as opposed to me saying, you know, I'm sorry for your loss or something kind of generic. Yeah.
And although we may not be able to identify with somebody's, you know, we may not have had the same experience as they've had, we can definitely identify with the feeling.
Right.
We will have had the same feeling. So that's what we need to tap into with empathy.
Yeah, that's so universal. And even it matters less the intensity. You know, there's certain mental illnesses like depression and I feel anxiety as well that people understand a bit easier at times because they know what feeling anxious feels like. They know what feeling sad feels like. And so they may not have experienced the intensity of those feelings, but they can understand up to a point.
Yeah.
And that's always going to get you much further in a personal relationship than saying, oh, it'll be all right. Don't worry. When the person's mind is screaming at them that you need to worry, that everything's going to go wrong, you're just going to seem like you're speaking nonsense if you don't empathise with that experience. And so we'll wrap up there. We are coming near the end of our time. Is there anything else you'd like to share, like final message on empathy or any of the other seven skills?
I think I would like to encourage listeners to practice empathy. It's, as you said before, this skill and the others are skills that you need to put into practice every single day. So if you want to become more empathetic, generally, the best place to start is now. And the best place to start is with the very next person you have a conversation with. Because if you can do that, and you can practice every single day, then when you're in a situation where the stakes are high, So perhaps that really difficult conversation or that difficult relationship, you'll be coming from a much stronger place.
Right. I really love that. What a great proactive takeaway from the episode. And so if people want to get your book, it's 7 Skills for the Future. They can get that, I'm assuming, Amazon, the best bookshops.
All the best bookshops are stocking that book, yes.
Brilliant. And is there anywhere else people should find you online?
Yes, I also have a podcast on Monday mornings, also called 7 Skills for the Future, and a website, unimenta.com. And there are some nice little exercises on empathy on the website as well. So
okay.
Go to the website and have a look at those. There's a lovely one on self-care.
Right, yeah, it's very important to us here at the podcast. Brilliant. Well, it sounds like you've got all the tools, so I hope the listeners will take a look at them. I'll put some links in the episode description. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing with me.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.